if you could find brand new worlds right here on Earth, where anything is possible? Same planet, different dimension.
I found the gateway.
The Rewatch Podcast presents The Sliders Rewatch, dedicated to the series Sliders on Fox and Sci-Fi Channel. Join us each week as we continue crossing the Einstein-Rosen-Podolsky Bridge and find ourselves in strange new worlds. Email your thoughts on each episode to the Rewatch Podcast at gmail.com. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/rewatchpodcast or on Twitter at rewatchpod.
And welcome back to the Rewatch Podcast and our Sliders Rewatch. I'm Corey.
And I'm Tom.
And thank you for joining us here at our episode number one, where we will be discussing Sliders Pilot Parts 1 and 2. So very excited to be getting into it, Tom.
Yes, definitely. Been waiting for this for a while.
All right, so let's get straight into it. The first episode discussion, of course, is the Pilot Part 1, written by Tracy Tormey, with story by Tracy Tormey and Robert K. Weiss, directed by Andy Tennant, and this originally aired March 22nd of 1995. So, Tom, would you like to give us a synopsis of this episode?
Sure thing. Quinn Mallory, attempting to create an anti-gravity device, creates instead a wormhole, allowing him to travel between dimensions. At first, he thinks the device has failed since going through it seems to have done nothing at all since he is still in his basement and everything looks the same. As he goes about his day, he realizes that things are different. Red lights mean to go, while green lights mean to stop. The radio reports are about global cooling, vinyl LPs winning the battle over CDs, and a billboard promotes Elvis appearing in Las Vegas. The final change is seeing his mom pregnant with the gardener's child. Quinn is then whisked back to his home dimension by the timer. Now, Quinn is excited and wants to share his success, but is berated by Professor Arturo, who he apparently had insulted earlier in the day. He's also lost his job at Doppler Computers and kissed his, quote, best bud, Wade, none of which he remembers doing. Returning home to his basement, he is confronted by a second Quinn, Quinn 2, who explains the process and theory of sliding before being whisked away back to his home dimension. The only problem is Quinn 2 was not able to warn our Quinn Prime about activating the timer early and the consequences. Quinn invites Professor Arturo and Wade over and reveals the timer and wormhole to them. They decide to test it out, turning up the power in case the vortex is not quite big enough. As they go through, the vortex moves out of the house and into the street, where it sucks up singer Rembrandt Brown, sliding them all into a world that has been completely frozen over. In the face of an impending tornado, the quartet decides to activate the timer early to escape death, with Wade, Arturo, and Remy sliding through, landing safely, quote, back home, and anxiously looking up at the vortex, waiting for Quinn to slide through.
Very succinct of you.
Thank you.
Yeah, so this first episode, I mean, this actually originally aired as just one big long introduction to Sliders, both the pilots part one and two. So I think it's interesting how this episode ends on the cliffhanger.
Right, exactly. I did not feel any, like, even when I watched it originally, if I had watched it as a two-parter, still, I don't think I would have felt any danger that Quinn wouldn't make it through. Exactly. You know, there was no sense like, oh no, he's not going to make it. I didn't feel that.
I guess we can say we're a little biased, you know, having seen the whole series many times.
Of course, yeah.
But, seriously, like, you know, in retrospect, Jerry O'Connell's a big star. We know that he's in all but one season of the show, so yeah, the suspense dropped a little, but we are kind of jumping forward there,
right?
we've got some areas that we'd like to discuss. So I guess we should start with early references to Quinn and his other interests.
Right, because there's a lot of stuff in his room as we try to get a sense of who this person is, because he's not just a total geek. You know, as they pan around his room, there's more than just like, you know, textbooks and references to, you know, other dimensional. Like he had the book with, I forget what it was called, but it's a very famous book about parallel universes. There's more than just that in his room. You've got a lot of sports stuff. You've got references to dinosaurs, little figures around like that. I know there was a surfboard, a basketball, which does come into play later, his, you know, his sports ability. So there's a lot of stuff there to show that Quinn is not just your typical geek kid. He's not your typical nerd that you may have known in school.
Yeah, and it is quite good how they bring some of those elements into his scientific life, like the basketball that he uses when he's testing the vortex. He's throwing it through, he set the timer, and then he waits for the basketball to return, which it does.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I actually love the whole video diary aspect of it. I think it's funny that he sits down and he watches his own video diaries through. It's like just reading back your own diary.
This is true. This is true. I'll tell you though, I'm a musician, of course, and I record like all my shows. You know, like when I do a show, whether it's, you know, online or in person here in town, I record those and I'll listen back to those things so many times because I'm listening to see how I did and what I can improve on. If I missed a little something here or there that I could make better. So that's why I think he probably watches it. He's like, well, let me see. Did I miss something? You know, maybe there's something I didn't notice when I first watched it.
Yeah, and it does set up that his mind is constantly going a million miles an hour.
Right.
You know, there's a lot going in there and he needs to get it all out. It's something that plays throughout the whole series as we get into it, is that a lot of the time he's just so focused on what he's doing that I guess he can just skip over all that kind of side things.
September 25th. For 3 days, I've been sending objects into the void. Paper airplane, Rubik's Cube, even my T-Rex. I figured the carnivore could take care of himself. All vanished without a trace. Last night, I perfected a timing device designed to return things from wherever it is they're going. I sent another object in, 19 minutes, 40 seconds ago, with the timer set on 20 minutes. With any luck, it should be returning right about now. And the crowd goes crazy.
Oh, yeah, definitely. He gets super focused on things. So when we're talking about where Quinn comes from and his Earth is not our Earth, like our real world Earth. Okay, so one thing that I noticed when you're watching Quinn go to his college there, it looks a lot like Berkeley, but it's located in Golden Gate Park, and Berkeley is not near Golden Gate Park. So that's one thing that tells us that maybe that Quinn's world is not our world. So it's a whole separate thing. Wade mentions a college later on that she attended that actually isn't even located in San Francisco. And then the biggest thing is that if you combine all that together with one of the posters on Quinn's walls, there's a poster of Einstein and there's a quote that says, basically, there's a heck of a world next door, you know, let's go. And you know, on the poster, it implies that it's said by Einstein, but in our world, that quote is said by E.E. Cummings. So it just gives us a little hint that world that we see there is not our world. It's a minor thing. I'm sure it doesn't really mean anything, but it's just something that I noted when I was watching.
Oh, just good call, really, because, you know, again, getting into the later episodes, we do see how subtle changes are made. We get to times when they think that they're home, but it's just that one tiny little difference that means they are not home. So I think it's actually quite interesting to think that Quinn and Arturo and Wade and Remy all actually come from a parallel universe that is not our real world of Earth as we know it.
Right, because normally you watch and you think, oh, they're just part of our world, but there's these little things that they have in there. And I don't know if it was intentional, but it's kind of neat to think about that. Oh, they're from another parallel world, not from where we are from.
Well, it's a good way to sort of explain away any continuity problems that the show might end up having.
Exactly.
Okay, so I guess aside from Quinn, you know, we've got a few other characters here. And, you know, a character that I love throughout the show is Remy.
Oh, yeah. Remy is great. He changes quite a bit, too, throughout the whole series. But, yeah, in the beginning here, there was a scene where his manager was looking at one of his gold records on the wall. And they panned in pretty close. They really zoomed in close to that record label. And I was like, well, that must be a reason why they did that. And so I looked it up, and it's called GRT, and it was a real record label that existed and closed down in 1979 and was related to Chess Records. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Chess Records at all, but they're pretty big back in the old days of rock and roll and rhythm and blues and all. So they took that record label as Remy's record label, which I thought, well, that's kind of cool. It's neat that they have a real world tie-in right there.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I actually love the touch that at some point the spinning tops were actually quite successful, but mm-hmm. at some point Remy was either forced out of the band or he quit, and the tops skyrocketed up the charts.
Yes, they did. And I know.
He makes the point of saying, oh, they were 13 gold records minus you. And he's like, no, it was 12. And they were all flukes.
Yeah. And that's something like I didn't catch that when I had first watched it. I just sort of had this idea that, oh, yeah, he was just like, you know, a very famous guy. But maybe he wasn't quite as famous. You know, it was the tops maybe that were carrying him all those years, which I did not. Like all these years that I've watched Sliders, I just assumed I missed that part of the scene for some reason. I didn't even know. And I was like, oh, wow, maybe he wasn't the reason they were so successful.
And it is the way he talks about himself and his career as well. He makes right. It seem like he's like the Freddie Mercury of Queen or something like that. Like he's the genius one behind it.
Exactly. And I bought into it. He convinced me, you know.
But of course, his career comes into play a lot as we go forward. And,
oh, yeah.
His singing abilities. So we'll get into that more.
Now, I had a question, which I was like, I wasn't quite sure about why this was going on. But Remy was driving down a suburban street to get to Candlestick Park. I don't know if, because I've never been to San Francisco, I don't know if it's close by there or whatever, but it just seems like he would be on a highway to get to, like, you know, a major baseball park in order to sing the anthem. But instead, he's driving down like a suburban street.
Yeah, and it does seem that his manager's office is in an inner city area.
Right,
as well.
Right.
So, yeah, I guess he's taking the back roads, the leisure route.
I guess so, because I was like, why is he driving down this street? Like, that just seems so odd. Like, oh, just, you know, I got to sing the anthem. I'm just going to take a back way, you know? It's like, you think he'd want to be there early and just be prepared.
He likes to cruise in his beautiful crimson chariot, as he calls
exactly,
it.
Exactly. All right, what about, now let's talk about Quinn, too, the one that shows up and solves the formula for him. He just sucks at helping out, doesn't he?
He really does. And when I originally watched the series and then returned to it, this was something that I'd forgotten, was that Quinn doesn't actually solve it. It's his alternate that slides in, solves the problem, gives him the answer.
Yep.
And I think that's an important lesson, is that Quinn never actually managed to do that last bit of hard work himself. He was just, it was given to him. And the result is devastating because they end up getting lost. So it is a great little touch that we have this alternate Quinn who does that last bit of heavy lifting for him.
And like in my head, it's like, if you're going to go and you're going to talk to your double and tell him about sliding, the first thing you should say is, by the way, don't ever activate the timer early because you will be lost and you will never get home. You know, that's like the first thing that's like so important because like, well, obviously, because they never got home. Well, that's debatable. But anyway, you know, that would be the first thing I would say. Hey, all right, look, this is a gateway to other dimensions. But let me tell you, you know, you activate that thing, do not activate it again until it reaches zero. Otherwise, you're going to be lost and you will not get back here. That would be the first thing I would say.
Yeah, and they even touch on the subject of controlled sliding.
Mm-hmm.
You can't pick your destination. And he says, well, not yet. you know, so while we're on the subject, don't activate the timer early.
Exactly. Like, you just say that, you know, and truthfully, as we go through the episode, even if he had told him, it really wouldn't have mattered if he had told him, you know, because they still activate it early because of what's going to happen with the tornado coming to him, you know?
Yeah.
So they were going to activate it early no matter what. I don't know. It was just, I think it was like a typical thing like you hear in stories, you know, where they're like, by the way, don't, and then boom, they're gone. And they never get to finish the statement. And so you're left wondering, why can't they, what was he going to say? You don't know. But if he had said, don't activate it early because you'll never get home, you'd still have that sense of tension when they're deciding should be activated or not because the tornado's coming. There's still going to be tension there. It doesn't matter. The thing is not should we activate it because we don't know what's going to happen. No, it's like the drama is like should we activate it because we're going to die or, you know, or we're going to save ourselves.
You're going to love sliding, Quinn. I've been to a world where the Cubs have won 3 straight World Series. Get out. I once stepped onto an Earth just this side of paradise, where there's no pollution, no crime or hate. People were happy, and a stranger was welcomed with love. No one was afraid there, Quinn. Think about that. No one's afraid. I had set the timer for 20 hours before I left home that day. Not nearly enough time in a world like that. I hope I find it again. I'll always keep looking. Oh, and about the timer, I gotta warn you, this is important. No matter what happens during a slide, I can't hear you. Oh!
And I have to say, throughout the series, they are quite inconsistent with the use of the portal and how it works and what it does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I'm sure we'll get into that as we get into our discussion of those episodes, but... Right. Yeah, you know, even here at the beginning, when he turns up the power so all 3 of them can fit in, and then suddenly the wormhole just goes out of control, flies through the walls into the street, sucks up Remy. That never happens again.
Never, never happens again. And, you know, it doesn't suck up anything else as it goes, you know? It's just like it just goes right out into the street and boom, gets Remy. That's it. You know, the house is fine. Everything's fine, you know? Yeah.
We're not sucking up the white picket fences.
Exactly. We're not sucking up the squeaky gate or anything. It's just boom. So yeah, that was something I was like, why is the portal moving? As I was thinking about this, I thought of a way that they could have done it that would have made a little more sense. Okay. Now, you know, Remy, of course, you know, he's an entertainer and he's a little bit goofy and silly here in the series at this point. And I thought, well, what if he was, and this would explain everything about why he's on a suburban street. What if he's going to Candlestick Park, have a little scene where he forgets, he can't tell where he's going, like he gets lost. And then he turns off onto these suburban streets. He decides, I better stop and ask for directions. He stops, knocks on Quinn's door. You know, maybe the door is left open. He just sort of walks in and says, hello, you know, I'm lost. I need some directions. And then he gets caught up in the portal that way.
Yeah, you see, that could make a lot more sense. You know, he sort of just stumbles on the open vortex and gets sucked into it.
Exactly. Because when that portal started moving, I'm like, what? This never happens ever again. It's a little nitpick. It's just funny. You know, I'm just like, okay, well, there it goes. Bye, portal.
And it does lead to this portion of it where they're on this frozen world. And for some reason, they're all in Remy's caddy instead of, I don't know, just staying in the basement of the house.
Exactly, because that would be probably pretty safe, you know, underneath the ground, tornado comes by, rips off the house, but they're underground. They'd probably be a lot safer right there. And then they could have waited out the time and then slid when they were supposed to.
Yeah, but yeah, at the same time, you gotta give it to the show, because otherwise you wouldn't have that suspense, the mm-hmm. tension.
Oh yeah,
of
course. Of course.
And it's still all right storytelling, even if you can poke all these holes through it.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
And, of course, Remy's genuinely upset that he's been sucked into some mad scientist's porthole.
Right. And about the loss of his car, too.
Yeah, that's just it. You're compounding the problem. He's lost his beautiful Cadillac convertible. Mm-hmm. He's been sucked away to another world. It's all this stuff that he can really complain about as the show moves forward.
It would appear that our roulette wheel has landed us on a world that has suffered a terrible climactic cataclysm.
Nuclear winter?
Quite possibly. Or a shifting of the Earth's axis, or some sort of ecological disaster.
The question is, how are we getting home?
The same way we came. The timer will be returning us to my basement in about 4 hours.
4 hours? It's like 4 years in a place like this.
Though actually string theory dictates that time will remain the same in all parallel worlds. Present day, wherever we are. In fact, time will always remain concurrent during all interdimensional slides.
You want to roll that by me again, man, in English this time?
Well, 4 hours spent here is the same as 4 hours spent on Alba.
So if now's now, I can still make the game and do the gig. You taking me back, man, and you doing it this instant.
But I don't think I'm supposed to alter the timer. He's the other Quinn. He was trying to warn me about that, but his voice, it kept fading.
Hold it a minute, guys. Do you hear something?
Another thing that I noticed, when Quinn first slides, when our Quinn Prime slides, and he is like 15 minutes in this other world, you know, with the Elvis appears in Las Vegas and the global cooling and all that. If you notice, the cars on that world, remember, red means go, green means stop. But if you notice the cars when he's driving, whenever they stop, their brake lights are red. Technically, shouldn't the brake lights be green?
That's a good point.
Yeah, just pointing it out, you know, because if green means to stop, then that's what the brake lights should be. Otherwise, you'd be driving behind him. You see the red, you know, oh, it's time to go. You know,
yeah.
Just go ahead. Anyway, there's little nitpick things. Doesn't mean we don't like the show. It's just, notice this, notice that, notice, the other thing.
Now, opening the vortex as well. I mean, the first few times we see Quinn do it, he just opens it and it's in front of him and mm-hmm. it's just like a tunnel that you can jump through. Quinn, too, he opens it on the floor so he can jump down into it. But when they leave the ice world, for some reason, they open it in the sky. So they need to jump up into it. And Quinn has to give everybody a leg up to get into it.
Right. Yes, yes, yes.
So I guess, you could say that's compounding the suspense for the cliffhanger ending.
Right.
Can he
right.
actually even reach it?
Mm-hmm. And it looks like it even just sucks them up. Like, they don't even get all the way up in it. It just sort of, like, pulls them in. So, I guess maybe if he just jumped high enough, it would just suck them right up.
Yeah.
But still, yeah, like, why not open it right in front of you? Or on the ground, It's like, all right. Yeah. Again, drama, Dramatic license.
And I have to admit, it is kind of boring if they just open it up in front of themselves,
Oh, yeah.
It's going to be interesting seeing all the different ways that they can get through the vortex
mm-hmm.
as the series progresses. I guess on a last note, you've discovered that there were some scenes that were deleted or not even filmed.
Yes. Over on the website Dimension of Continuity, they have a bunch of scripts with outtakes. Some of them were filmed, most of them were not. There was a scene that was shot of Remy singing the anthem in Candlestick Park. It was supposed to be a dream sequence of him singing, and they actually shot that one. It just got cut for time, I suppose. Also, in a later scene, Tracy Torme makes an appearance as well as a soldier. Again, he was cut out. Scene was left on the cutting room floor. But the biggest part of the script that was changed from the very beginning was the introduction of a girl named Stephanie, who was Quinn's crush. And there's a number of scenes in the original script where he interacts with her and talks with her. And you can see that he is like pining for this girl who has a boyfriend, and she thinks of Quinn as like a friend, just a really nice guy. It had some really nice moments. Like if you check out Dimension of Continuity, go to their Lost and Found, and you can look at all the different parts that they have there for each season, all the different deleted scenes or changed premises there. And this girl Stephanie was in several scenes in the pilot, and they were pretty cool scenes. I think they would have been nice to have in there, but again, it would have led to a much longer episode, a much longer premiere. So I guess that's why they cut it or changed it.
And you can say that Wade fills that role as well.
And she does, yeah.
Yeah. And of course, later they actually do bring this idea back into just one episode of this woman that Quinn had pined for.
Right.
And sees at least two different iterations of her across two different worlds.
And I think if they had had more control, like some shows do today, if they had more control over when or what order they were going to shoot things in, this would have helped out a lot, because then they would have introduced this girl here in the pilot, and then maybe you would see her like every couple episodes. She might pop up in a little bit part, you know, but they couldn't do that, of course, because they had no control over what episodes were going to be shown when. And if this girl just showed up from whenever, you'd be like, well, who's this person? We don't know who this is.
Exactly. It's hard to set up a character when your show is being aired out of order.
Exactly. Hard to develop them that way.
And now, another episode of That's Random with Remy.
Yeah, all my fans will be flocking to the field tonight.
This has been another episode of That's Random with Remy.
Okay, so moving on to Pilot Part 2, all the stats are the same, written, directed, and air date. Like I said, it aired originally as just one big like TV movie pilot. So do you want to give us the synopsis for part two, Tom?
Sure thing. Quinn finally comes through the wormhole and all are glad to be home. Things quickly turn around, though, as they start to see things around them that are not right. Wade tries to use a public phone to call home and finds herself in trouble with the phone company for unauthorized use of the phone. Quinn and Arturo discover a statue of Lincoln has changed to a statue of Lenin, and a homeless man from Earth Prime is now a U.S. senator speaking out against something called the American Underground. Remy also gets arrested for trying to pay a taxi driver with his American money as opposed to the red Soviet money that is used in this dimension's America. Remy is then sent to People's Court, is tried and imprisoned. The professor explains that in this dimension, the domino theory held true, and the Soviet Chinese Empire took over, spreading communism until the U.S. resources were drained. Wade, Professor, and Quinn stage a raid with the American Underground to rescue Remy, as well as this dimension's commander, Wade Wells, who was caught days ago and sentenced to a public execution. The raid works in that Remy is rescued, but Commander Wells is shot and dies during the firefight. The Underground takes this win as a shot in the arm and vows to continue the fight. Our quartet fires up a newly fixed timer and slides. Once again, arriving in what appears to be our home, they check for signs. The statue of Lincoln has returned, the U.S. senator is once again a homeless man on a bench, and Quinn's house gate squeaks. The four discuss what to do with the timer when in walks Quinn's dad, who is alive and well in this dimension, indicating that they haven't actually returned home to Earth Prime.
Okay, so this second part, I think, is what really drives home what the core of this show is going to be about, just how dramatically different worlds can be, as opposed to what the first part was, where things are just slightly different.
Mm-hmm.
I guess aside from the, you know, the frozen planet, I mean, that's pretty dramatic.
Yes.
But this is like the road not taken. You know, America loses one war and suddenly is a gigantic Soviet-ruled part of the planet.
Right. That's what the domino theory was all about. Now, this was a theory that was really big. It started back in the 50s and, you know, all the way up through the like the 80s. And it was basically saying that if one country in a region was taken over by a group, then the surrounding countries in that area would also fall under that control as well, sort of like a domino effect. One country falls, then everything else surrounding it would fall as well. And that happened in this world, but it didn't actually happen in our world. That's how the U.S. got involved with the Vietnam War, claiming the whole domino theory thing. But the fact that they lost there in our world did not have a domino effect. So I looked it up, and the basic thing that it said was that the leader of Vietnam back then, the Ho Chi Minh, he wasn't concerned with spreading global communism. He just wanted it in Vietnam. So the domino theory did not really take effect in our world like it did in the sliders in this world that they slid to.
Yeah, and it's a pretty great explanation of the whole thing as well, especially when they're talking with the American Underground, which is led by an early appearance of Roger Cross, who I guess any sci-fi fan knows shows up in like every sci-fi show ever. When Arturo is explaining the domino theory and mentions that back in their world that America did win the war and the Berlin Wall was torn down and everything like that, and exactly how they feel about that. You know, it's just one line where he says, man, we're in the wrong world, buddy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly.
So it's great to sort of be able to get all that information in pretty much is just one scene, one big monologue with Arturo explaining this domino effect.
The United States, a conquered nation. How on earth could that have happened?
It all began in the 50s when we lost the Korean War. The Sino-Soviet Empire swept the globe. First into China, then Europe, South America. We were economically isolated from the rest of the world. Their assets and technology grew while ours shrank and finally collapsed.
Why, that's the domino theory. In reality, in our universe, it was the Soviet Union that collapsed. The Berlin Wall was pulled down and communism is virtually extinct.
Sounds like a dream, doesn't it?
We're on the wrong planet, my friend.
The professor and Quinn, they talk about doing equations by hand, and they have like a slide rule to do these equations because they have to fix the timer, right? So to me, like when they had the timer apart, there was a bunch of wires, looked like a circuit board. I don't know. I'm not that technical about, you know, the innards of, you know, technology so much. It just looked like it looked very like physical. Like there was a lot of stuff in there. And I don't know, like, so they had to do these equations by hand. How did those equations they did by hand, how did they get those changes into the timer? Because I guess they didn't have a computer, because that's the big thing they were trying to, you know, make the point out as, is they had to do these equations by hand. It's so hard. You know, well, that's what Quinn said, at least.
Yeah, and if you go back to that first part, we do, you know, there's the whole famous thing about the equation up on the chalkboard that Quinn 2 mm-hmm. finishes for him.
Right.
So Quinn is already pretty adept at working things out by hand.
Mm-hmm.
But it seems that in this episode, Arturo sort of berating him for not being able to do it properly.
And I'm just like, that's great that you can do these equations and everything, but I just don't understand how solving those equations, how did they get that into the timer to actually get it to be fixed, is what I'm saying. Because they do all that, and then in the end, when the timer isn't working, they pull a Fonzie move and they start hitting it, and then boom, it works again. So it's like, well, it's a good thing we did all those equations, because they're just going to hit it, kick it, it'll work, you know? I don't know. It's just, that's something that I noticed. And they do that some other times throughout the series too, where they talk about equations and trying to fix the timer with that. And I'm just wondering, like, there's no built-in like way. It doesn't seem like there's a built-in way to put equations into the timer. Like, I, you know, obviously it's a sci-fi show. It's not actual, you know, really working, but still, I think to myself, well, how would these equations get put into the timer to fix it, to make it work right?
And what is it about sliding from the exact place that you slid in from going to affect it in any way?
Yeah, it gives it a better chance that we'll get home if we're, you know, right where we were in the beginning. Well, it's just, you know, it increases the drama, because if they're not there, you know, if they're not there in that spot, it's like, oh, we got to get back to where we were in order to slide, you know, otherwise we don't have as great a chance. So, you know, it's dramatic license again, you know.
It's the unfortunate thing about this show is that they don't really try too hard to be exact on the science.
Right.
They do come up, like you said, with all kinds of dramatic license, just sort of mm-hmm. just a hand wave, and this is the way it is.
And you know, they don't need to be that exact with the science either. I'm not trying, believe me, I am not that guy who's like, well, you know, in that episode, they should have used the, you know, Pythagorean theorem to, you know, get to this spot. Like, it doesn't matter to me. You know, like, I know there's friends of mine on Facebook who will analyze things like mad. And I'm like, just enjoy it, man. It's just, yeah. It's a fun episode. And the only reason I bring these up now is because I'm like looking at the episode in a different way than I used to look at, you know, since we're reviewing it and we're talking about it, I'm looking at things a little bit more analytically than I usually do.
I guess we're pretty much in agreement on that. It's fine that they do this hand wave every now and again, just sort of mm-hmm. keep the story moving forward. We don't need to think too hard about it. So in this episode, it progresses the idea of Wade and Quinn as a couple. We sort of got it in the first episode where Wade tells the story of how Quinn 2 quit the job and then kissed her, and mm-hmm. she was kind of into it, but that doesn't go anywhere because that wasn't actually Quinn.
Right,
Quinn
right.
Pry. So in this episode, it sort of even compounds that further, where Commander Wade Wells is shot and Quinn has mistaken her for his Wade. It is starting to draw out that relationship. Are they more than buddies, as Quinn always refers to them, or is there more there?
And even in that first episode, if you notice, when they first introduce Wade, she's like following him around like a little puppy dog. You know, you could tell that she just has, you know, she really likes Quinn and he's just oblivious to it all. You know, he just doesn't even see her that way because, like, as he says in that episode, he's like, well, we're best buds. So, yeah, he's starting to feel those feelings in this episode when he thinks that she has died. You know, and you definitely start to see those things come to the surface.
We made it. It's over. Oh. We can all try to get home now. Wait. Oh, God, wait. No. No, no, no. Oh, stop the truck. Stop. Stop the truck. Over here. Now, gently. Gently. Okay. Oh. Oh. Get back, give me some room.
Step back.
She's, I don't think she's breathing. Oh. Trust me, I'm gonna get you home.
Okay, so getting into the end of the episode, the credits are played over Remy's music video with the Tops.
Right, and I just, you know, I thought it was a lot of fun. It reminded me of a James Brown style performance where James Brown would like be singing and then he would start to act like he was getting too tired to go on. Then someone would come out and give him like a cape or something and he would magically have this strength to go back and keep on singing. And that's what Remy's performance reminded me of when I saw it this time. I was like, he's like James Brown. He's like Sliders James Brown.
I love this song. It's the Cry Like a Man song.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all about how he's going to cry from one eye and then he can drop a tear from the other eye. And
yeah, it's a lot of fun. It's a lot of silly, goofy fun.
Yeah, the crying man. So this is setting up that he is the crying man, Remy Brand. So.
I've actually been looking at the other song, Tears in My Fro. I've been looking it up, trying to get the words for it, as many words as I can find, and I'm going to try to figure out the chords. And if I am successful, I am going to try to do an acoustic version of that song.
Oh my God, that would be awesome.
So if I am successful, summer's coming, I'm going to have a little bit of extra time. I'm going to try and do an acoustic version of Tears in My Fro. So make sure you continue listening to the podcast because it'll make its debut here.
Oh my God, that would be fantastic. Hey, at the very least, you could always sing Cry Like Man.
There you go.
I can't find all the words for Tears in My Fro.
Exactly.
All right. So there were some other deleted scenes here that you found.
Right. In this one, there's some additional scenes of the rebels when they stage the raid of going into the university. And Arturo has a great quote from the outtakes from the script. And he says, you know, we used to promote free thinking in these halls. Now we condemn it. And I was like, that was a nice line. You know, it didn't make it into the final episode. Also, of course, Quinn's Stephanie is back, and she, in this world, gets a commendation from the Soviets. So she's a member of the Soviet army in this world. And also the biggest thing was that Commander Wade Wells does not die. They originally had her living and making a full recovery and continuing to lead the American underground, which was I thought that was kind of neat. I don't know why they had to kill her off. I mean, not like we're going to go back to this world, but it was kind of neat that she makes a full recovery and, you know, continues to lead the rebels.
So, where are we going tomorrow?
Just kidding.
So, Crying Man, you ever think about singing gospel?
Girl, I haven't sung like that in 20 years. Maybe I still do in some places, huh?
So what do we do with this thing?
You know, I never thought to hear myself say such a thing, but I believe we should consider destroying it. Einstein regretted that he had given the world the atom bomb. Oppenheimer, when he saw the first explosion, quoted the Hindu scripture, "I am become Shiva, God, the destroyer of worlds."
But think of the benefits. There are bound to be worlds that have outlawed war or cured cancer.
And worlds where they have perfected war and developed new cancers.
Maybe that's why we should keep it a secret. If I found a place that was paradise, I don't think I'd tell anybody.
Well, I'd like to propose a toast to wherever you live and whatever your struggle.
To the revolution.
And to the end of a journey.
All right, so that's the pilots part one and two discussion down. A great intro to Sliders. I absolutely love it. So I'm really looking forward to moving forward from here.
Yep, definitely. Me too.
Okay, so we want to remind you that we do have our Messages from Earth Prime segment. So if you're watching along with us, hey, shoot us over an email or a voice message, anything you like. Tell us what you think of these episodes.
Yeah, if you guys have any special moments in Sliders that you really liked, like if there was something about this episode that touched you or that stood out to you that you wanted to, you know, just let us know about, feel free to tell us. You know, let us know and we'll mention it here.
Okay, so next week, keeping with our watching it in filming order structure that we've got going here, we will be discussing The Summer of Love and Prince of Wales. So really looking forward to that. All right. So shall we give out our contact information?
So you can get with us on our Facebook group at facebook.com/rewatchpodcast or follow the show on Twitter at rewatchpod.
And as I was saying, remember, you can always write an email or record a voice message and send it to therewatchpodcast@gmail.com. Also, if you've enjoyed the show, please consider giving us a rate and review on iTunes. Always helps with things like search results, lets people know what they're in for when they come to the podcast. So thank you very much for doing that. Okay, so time to get out of here for this episode. So I will just say until next time. Oh God, I kissed Hurley. No wonder I got fired.
We got a slide.
Rewatch Podcast is not associated with NBC Universal, St. Clair Entertainment, Fox, or Sci-Fi Channel. The use of any and all copyrighted material is only for parody, news analysis, critique, or educational purposes, as provided in United States Code Title 17, aka Fair Use. Music provided by Kevin MacLeod at Incompetech.com. Copyright 2015, The Rewatch Podcast.